Hey guys, Spirit of the Law here. In this video, I'm going to be doing an interview with Mass Mora. Let's check it out.
That's perfect. I love it. People are going to be so confused. You know, speaking of which, I always wondered how important are these openers and closers for a YouTuber, and just asking for a friend, you know?
I think it helps. I don't know. I am really into routines, and I'm sure you noticed that from the video. So there's kind of certain things I like to do. I mean, you know, it used to be the intro was kind of the big one. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I think having that kind of stuff that people recognize, and it can just sort of tap into something in your brain that, you know, you make these little pathways and it just kind of brings you back to good times. I think that stuff is kind of important.
Such a good point, actually. Do you know War Owl? Have you heard of him?
He's mainly a
CSGO YouTuber, and he always finishes his video with, "I'm the War Owl and I still have no closer." So he made a closer out of the fact he doesn't have a closer, which I thought was pretty, pretty creative. Listen, man, we always like to kick things off here by talking about our guest's first step with the game. And your case is a pretty interesting one, because your first contact with the game was the strategy book for the Conqueror's expansion, which your father bought. So that's the first expansion for Age of Empires 2, The Age of Kings. But the funny thing is, you didn't actually own any of those games. So was your father aware of the fact that there was actually an accompanying product to that book?
I'm pretty impressed you tracked that down. I haven't told too many people that story, but so I owned Age of Empires 1, and then my dad, his mom lives in Florida, and whenever he would go on a trip to visit, you know, you always had to bring back a gift for the kids so that they're excited that you come back. And he knew I had Age of Empires, but he brought back the Age of Empires 2 strategy guide, which I didn't have, and he thought they were the same thing, but which is great. So that I, as the sneaky kid I was, I, you know, managed to convert that into him also buying me Age of Empires 2. So that was perfect.
So you did play Rise of Rome. That's what I wanted to say. And I think you said you didn't really enjoy it, right? So what was it about Age of Empires 2 that made you actually enjoy this game now?
It's just some of my quality of life features, I think, just made Age of Empires 2 immediately more gripping. I don't know. Yeah, it's a good point. I didn't really think Age of Empires 1 was, you know, like the greatest game ever at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a lot of respect for it now, and obviously it was pivotal to the growth of the franchise, but yeah, Age of Empires 2, it just hit different when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. I was also surprised to learn that you also played in The Zone back in the days. And I've talked about The Zone many times before in this podcast. But for the newer folks here, The Zone was basically Microsoft's official platform for playing online back when the game was released. So what kinds of settings were you playing in The Zone?
I didn't really play a lot of ranked, but I had kind of a friend group of, you know, 5 or 6 friends, and I probably just had the most time to play. So I was kind of the best out of that particular group. Not that I was good or anything like that. And so, yeah, we play like custom scenarios, and we just, you know, team up like 3v2 and all stuff like that. And it was very big at that time when I was kind of in early high school. And so there's, you know, you just meet kids at school. It was a phenomenon, at least in my school, Age of Empires.
You mean the game itself was very big. That's what you mean.
Oh, yeah. The Age Conquerors, yeah.
That's so interesting, because in my school, I mean, I come from a rather poor country, Portugal, but nobody was playing computer games, number one, let alone Age of Empires 2. Sure. So that's actually very interesting to know that a lot of people were playing that. That's also an interesting point that you just brought up, which is not a lot of people were playing Rated back then, which is so true. I don't remember, barely anyone playing Rated. Most people are just playing unrated, and you know, all these weird settings like custom scenario and stuff. Why do you think that has changed now? I mean, we know that the majority of people still play unrated. We actually know that.
Sure,
but
yeah.
Why is there so many people who like to play competitively these days?
I think that's probably those people stuck around longer, I think, was probably more it. I think there's just a lot of casual players, and they just want to play casually, and they're not playing the game 20 years later. So I think that's probably, I think it probably also selection bias too, of who you see online and who's represented. True. And who's talking, True. Who's got a voice, that sort of thing. So I don't know. Like you say, I still think the unrated and not even just unrated, but people who don't even play online at all is still a huge part of the game.
It's still the vast majority. Yeah, we actually know that. Mm-hmm. True. I know you like to play as the Huns. So were you still around when the Arabia Hun War fever was still going on?
I was really into them. I wasn't really into that like meta stuff. I just went like straight fast castle cavalry archers every time, because I love the Attila the Hun campaign and in the zone. I don't know if you remember the lobbies. We always used to hang out in Huns on the Run. which was one of the lobbies on the zone that nobody used to hang out in. And we'd always hang out in that one. We'd just play hand games. So.
That doesn't ring a bell. I remember Medieval Siege. I think
that was the big one. Yeah.
The biggest one, right? So, yeah. So you guys were just playing in a totally unpopulated lobby or what?
Yeah, pretty much. And we just play against each other. And then, I'd always be Huns and go cavalry archers and just dominate them. It was pretty fun. I don't know if I can get away with that now.
So you never made it to the, there was for many, many years, I want to say, there was this fever of Arabia-Hun War. That's what everybody was playing. If you were playing 1v1 Arabia, you were playing Hun Wars. So you didn't make it to that.
I was not in that. I kind of associate that more with Voobly, to be honest. Like,
true,
when I think about, like, where does that come from? And I never really got into Voobly. Like, I didn't even know the game existed after sort of one summer where I stayed up way too late every night playing it. And then I just kind of put the game down, just didn't really come back. Kind of moved on to music and things that girls like more than vampires when you're a teenager.
Such a good point. So did you come back to it when the HD version was released, 2013?
Yeah, so I was just, I like to watch YouTube, like nostalgia, just watch old games I used to play. And I think I came across like Zero Empires or Resonance 22 or something and realized that the game was back and you could buy it on Steam. So that was my reintroduction to it. It was kind of 2014, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of a little while after it came out.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because Zero Empires is someone who still works with the game, right? But Resonance 22 seems to have completely disappeared. But it was such an amazing YouTuber as well, right? Were there other games you enjoyed playing outside of the Age of Empires franchise?
I like the Total War series. I like Civilization. And there's just random games here and there, like one called FTL that I really like. But I don't know. I wouldn't really consider myself a huge gamer outside of Age of Empires 2, I guess, at least these days.
Because those are all strategy games, right? The ones you just
made. That's definitely my preference, is strategy games. Right.
So you didn't try anything else, like, I don't know, Tomb Raider was very big for me, or, I don't know, Call of Duty was big for me as well.
See, I've never played that. It's a classic. Right? I've never played Call of Duty in my life.
You didn't play Call of Duty, yeah. Yeah, well, people have different opinions, of course, but yeah, for me, it was an amazing game. All right, so listen, Spirit. You're one of the biggest Age of Empires 2 YouTubers. Your channel currently sits at 350,000 subscribers, 140 million views. You have 8 videos with over 1 million views. These are just absolutely mind-blowing numbers. And in your case, I think that's especially impressive because your content is so unique and no one was doing anything similar before. It all started in October 2014 when you released your first overview of the Japanese civilization, which is still available in your channel, and I'll be linking in the description box down below.
It's unlisted, though. I've redone it and made it a little better.
Right. I know, but I've digged a little bit and I still found it.
No, I'm sure.
So what motivated you to make that video, that first video?
I was actually really inspired by, actually not an Age of Empires 2 channel, but there's an Age of Empires 3 YouTuber. I'm trying to remember his name. Big Thunder Man. And I thought, he had a couple thousand subscribers, and I was like, oh man, that'd be so cool just to be able to commentate games and have a couple thousand people watch. Like, that'd be so awesome. And then, we can talk about sort of my educational background, but basically there was sort of a...
Please do.
Okay, so at that time, I was going to school to be a high school teacher, and we were supposed to have a practicum placement, but there was a teacher strike, like, just in that September. So basically that whole September, they couldn't find a practicum placement. There were no classes, so it was just kind of like hang around waiting for that to start. So that's just kind of decided, oh, I'll just make, nobody's done a Japanese overview, and I feel like Japanese are really underrated, so I'm just gonna give my thoughts and just make it as silly as possible, no plan to like build a channel out of it or anything.
Right.
And then just the reaction was really good to it, and I kind of tinkered away at them for a while.
I think it sits at 250,000, if memory serves. I watched it again, obviously. Right now, I'm not entirely sure. Oh, yeah, geez. So, 250,000.
It's a pretty rough video if you watch it now. I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure you're going to feel like that, right? Because you've made so many improvements in all sorts of things. Sure. Right, so you just said you kind of had a role model for the whole thing. Sorry, I didn't get the name. What was the name?
Big Thunder Man. Yeah, he made about like 100 videos, just like commentary videos. And I just thought he had so much charisma. And I just, like, I didn't even play Age of Empires 3, but I just watched those videos. It was great. It was very inspirational at the time.
Was there anybody streaming, or were you into streaming, into watching streams? I believe it must have been Justin TV back then, actually.
There really wasn't too much. I know Resonance 22 had like a weekly Friday or Saturday stream, And I would change that a little bit sometimes, but it was, you know, like 100 people or less. Like it was very, very small. And the number, like, I just didn't know too much about Twitch. I'm sure I could have found more channels at the time, but that was very new at the time. I don't know when Twitch came out, but something like that.
Right, because I was wondering if the kind of content that you were interested in was actually that you liked to watch, you know, watch gameplay. That was something that was happening a lot more often on Twitch, I feel like. Yeah, but you also said something which I thought was very interesting, which you said when you created your channel, like 80% of YouTube content related to Age of Empires 2 was just gameplay with someone commentating over it. So was that also a motivating factor that you wanted to offer something different?
I think it was more like, that was sort of my original vision as well. Like if you look at those earliest videos, a lot of them are that me commentating my own games or somebody else's. Mm-hmm. And I think it was more just the other stuff just struck a chord that people wanted that higher production value. And nobody was really doing that at the time. Like nobody sat down, had any sort of outline what they were going to talk about. I played music beforehand, so I had some knowledge of how to edit audio and video as well. So it just kind of bringing those skills, even though like I did not have good skills of those things, just I think that novelty of somebody doing it more professionally than just live off the cuff, I think that struck a chord, and that was a big factor in sort of those early days
in seeing such a big growth. Interesting. So are you a one-man team? Do you have anyone helping you? How does it work?
I think I've had one person help edit one video. I did a Jurassic Park gameplay video, and one person sort of edited, cut it down. I think that's the only outside, aside from like a couple interviews with Tato and Hera and stuff. It's all me. I do all of it.
Amazing.
That's fun. Yeah, I like all of it.
So like thumbnails, research, editing, it's all you.
Yeah, but I enjoy every step of the video making process. Like I've had people offer to edit the videos in a similar style, but I'm like, well, then what would I do?
That's my favorite part. It's amazing. Yeah, talk about it if you don't mind. How does the process of making a video from start to finish look like in your case? And how long does it take?
That really depends on the exact type of video. But
obviously.
Usually I try to set a day to do the testing. And so, you know, you get up and you just kind of run things in the scenario editor, and I try to have an outline ahead of time. Like I'll do the bullet points and I'll think about, okay, what questions come to mind for me? Because I'm sort of a naturally curious person about the game. And so I just think, what questions would I want to know? And I make that list and I just go through and try to answer them. And then usually the next day I'll sleep on it. I'll come back and I'll, rearrange it and come up with, if not like a full script, at least like an outline. Like there's a lot of improvisation as I'm recording, but to have like a good sense of what I'm going to say, and then edit down the audio, and then usually edit the video the next day. So I try to segment it into different days.
Okay, so that's something I always wondered. Do you do audio first or video first? So in your case, or probably in everyone's case, it's audio
always
first.
Always audio. Okay. Yeah. It's so much easier to adjust the timing of the video rather than try to adjust the timing of your explanation, for sure.
Right. Do you have a favorite video from the ones you've made? One you're particularly proud of?
I like the ones where it just happens all in one day and you're just really excited about it and you just do it. Like I had a Summer Games Olympic video that
I remember.
Somebody comments are like, oh my God, how many days did you spend on this? And like, I actually did it in one day. I got up and I was just inspired to do it in the morning and just did all the testing, recorded in the evening, stayed up till midnight editing it and threw it out the next morning. That one kind of sticks out as one that just came together. It was just a lot of fun.
Amazing, actually. You just talked about it and we can talk a little bit more in detail about it, but one of the very popular features of your channel is the intro music to some of your videos, which I believe you've composed yourself. Is that right?
I did. Yeah, that was a demo I did back, a long time ago before the channel started, and I like the vibe of that. But I don't really do that all that often anymore. Once you start getting to like 500 videos, I don't know if anybody wants to listen to it 500 times. You know what I mean?
So that's the reason why you kind of took it off some videos. Okay.
Well. The time it changed was right when Definitive Edition came out. And for the first time, I sort of went basically full time on the channel. And so I was putting out a video every day. I was like, people don't really want to hear this every day. Like, I like the idea of, like, I think a good intro, and these intros that get me so pumped up, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Star Trek Next Generation and stuff, like these intros that are so good and get me pumped every time. So it's like, I want to have something like that in my videos. But when it's every day and they start to be like 4-minute videos and,
you think it's too much.
Video is, it gets to be a little much. So now I just do it every once in a while for civil reviews and stuff.
Civil reviews, right. Did you have any sort of formal musical training?
No, just picked up a guitar and learned some chords and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I took a little bit of piano lessons when I was a kid, mm-hmm. but yeah, not too much. No, I just kind of self-taught.
But you didn't enjoy
a lot of music. Sorry?
You didn't enjoy the piano as much?
No, I love the piano, and I'm definitely better at piano than guitar, and that's my main instrument. But I kind of prefer being self-taught and experimenting. And there's so much on YouTube now when you just mm-hmm. want to know
some
basics
main tutorials. And stuff. And, right, yeah. Right. So was it more a classical style that you learned piano? Because I'm a piano teacher, in case you didn't know. I'm a classical piano teacher.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah,
oh,
so that's obviously very interesting to me. So did you have a teacher, or was it also self-taught, basically?
That was pretty much self-taught. My uncle's a professional piano player, and right. so he showed me a few things, but I also feel like there was a little bit of talent in the family to kind of pick things up quickly. But I also mm-hmm. think, like, I played guitar first, and I think that really helps learn piano. You start
Absolutely.
Thinking in terms of mm-hmm. chords and not right. reading music and individual right. notes. And so that makes it a lot easier. And then I had like a little training thing where I would go 3 minutes and just improvise in a key. And then I would modulate to the fifth. So I'd go from the key of C to key of G, play mm-hmm. that for 3 or 4 minutes, and then go into D. And so it was a lot of like improvisation. You get to know all the keys and you just get your dexterity up. It took about an hour.
Interesting method.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that was pretty formative. And then from that, most other things start feeling kind of easy.
There's one, you just said your uncle's is a professional pianist. There's one very famous Canadian pianist. I don't know if you're willing to say the name. Not him. Okay.
Sorry, he's American, so no.
Okay, well, there you have it. All right, so how much a role does music making play in your daily life? Do you practice every day? Do you work on the song every day? Do you play concerts?
Oh, at a certain point, I did. Like, I was trying to do music full-time as a job, sort of during school and right when I first started being a teacher. But yeah, I don't know. I play now and then. I was kind of thinking mm-hmm. about putting together an album at some point over the next 5 years, just, you know, solely home record stuff, but, you know, not really. It's just my mom would probably hear it. That'd probably be about it. But, you know, it's something I do for fun, but I don't take it as seriously as I did.
Mm-hmm. Back then. Okay. Mm-hmm. In one of your early videos, I think this was the video celebrating the 3,000 subscriber milestone, you said you have a very time-consuming hobby, so you're probably talking about music.
That would have been what I was talking about, yeah. Because I was playing regular shows every week and stuff at that point, because that was probably in the first 6 months or within the first year of the channel. So mm-hmm. yeah, music was my main thing. YouTube was just like a little side hobby.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of music was it? More like what we hear in the introduction?
Yeah, that would be a good example, sort of that like high energy acoustic sort of mm-hmm. stuff, I would say.
Cool. And you would play alone? Did you have a band or something?
I had a few different bands, but just before starting my channel, I'd moved to Vancouver Island. I didn't really know anybody on the island and never ended up finding a good group and, you know, finding the right people that you'd totally mesh with and you're all mm-hmm. sort of on the same page. So just never really found that right group. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I mean, things worked out.
Obviously. You know, as a musician myself, these things, I always notice these things. But as I was rewatching some of your older videos, it's pretty obvious to me that the way you narrate your videos, you know, the cadence of your voice has changed a little bit over the years. So while before you sounded more like you probably sound when you're just talking with friends and family, you now seem to have adopted a more, I'll call it, broadcasty style. You know, you speak slower, you emphasize more words. Was this a conscious decision on your part, or did it just happen naturally?
I think that just happens naturally. I just think as you do something more and more, mm-hmm. yeah, it just very slowly morphs. But even listening back, like I can almost tell the year that I recorded something just by going back and listening to the voice. And there was certain phases where I was emulating other certain YouTubers that, you know, had
really?
A certain cadence. And I would, yeah, there's a channel called The Plain Bagel, and he's also Canadian, and mm-hmm. he speaks in a very, he's just got a very unique way of talking. And I noticed mm-hmm. right around when Definitive Edition came out, I started to adopt a very similar sort of cadence as well. But I think I moved away from it now. You go through little phases with how you speak. But for sure, I think it's a little more professional now.
But that was a natural process? Or were you really trying to emulate the way that guy was speaking just because you liked it?
I think it's just a natural. You don't really think about it. You're more focused on, you know, saying the right things. And
right.
Yeah, you're not really thinking about how you're speaking very often.
Right. That's so interesting, actually. Also, in the early days of your channel, I remember having the impression you were a little bit, I'll say dismissive or maybe skeptical of the hardcore competitive community. I remember you saying you were against build orders, at least against the wide distribution of build orders. You also said you were skeptical about the future of channels that were too concentrated on gameplay commentary if Age of Empires were to start losing popularity at some point down the road. You did say that, but again, this was many years ago, 2015 or something, many years ago. But then at some point, I felt things started to shift a little bit. You invited Tato and Hera for an interview. You started using statistics, some high elo games in your videos. I even remember you referencing one of Mem's catchphrases. I think it was the fast and unpredictable or something, which you incorporated into one of your videos. I distinctly remember that. Is this somewhat accurate? Has there been a shift in the way you regard the competitive community?
I probably just know more about it now. I don't know. I do think at the start, I'd sort of, I don't know if I even was intentionally doing it, but I was definitely separate from that, like that whole side, which I didn't even really see as mainstream Age of Empires or like the mainstream community. I don't know. Just kind of, I don't know. There was definitely a sense of, they were a little rougher on me, I think, than sort of the other side. But I always kind of pride myself on being more of a man of the people. Like I was the only one, aside from Tato a little bit, who played HD instead of Voobly. And, you know, I just have always had a little bit more casual view on the game and an approach to the game. And yeah, I didn't really like, or it just didn't appeal to me, that sort of high level competitive stuff. And I felt like I gave sort of an alternative to that.
What about that part of the community you think didn't appeal to you? It's just the very rigorous build orders and, you know, a specific meta.
That for sure. Like I always found the most fun games were like free-for-alls that you're playing with friends. And that's just how I played the game. And to me, like that was the fun way to experience the game. And there was a very, it's less so now maybe, but there was a very judgmental tone towards that. And, you know, that I associated mostly with Voobly, I would say, is people just were, I don't know if elitist is the right word, but there was definitely a little bit of that. And there was some pushback, some natural pushback, I think, from me against that, because that's not how I ever enjoyed the game. And I did feel like there was quite a bit of judgment. And I felt like I was speaking for a lot of people at that point.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I was someone who was, I'll say, raised in Age of Empires II in the competitive scene. So I never really played campaigns or any of it. And yeah, we I think none of us was aware how many people were playing the game outside of the competitive scene and how big the casual player base of the game was. I think all of that it started.
It felt like a bit of a bubble was kind of going there.
Absolutely. And I think things started to change for me and for the people around me when the HD version came out and we saw 1 million downloads of the Forgotten, what was it called? Forgotten mode. So that would have been the first community mode made by the Forgotten Empires team, which then later on became the official first expansion, second expansion after the Conquerors. I think that's when we started realizing there's so much people that like to just play the game, you know, in these funny, funny settings. And yeah, that's the kind of audience I think you tapped most into, right?
I do think part of what changed with that though is when you had Definitive Edition, you had all the Voobly people, all the HD people came together in the same space. I really think that did a lot to change that dynamic though. It kind of felt like we were all in this big thing together. And I definitely felt that. And I think that I'm sure is reflected in how I speak about these things as well.
Dude, absolutely. The one thing is I was expecting HD to be what DE was. And I think a lot of us were expecting that. I know HD, Microsoft is finally getting involved in the game. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be amazing. But then, you know, there were, despite what you think about Voobly, there were a couple of things that were objectively superior about Voobly, you know, game stability, at least when it concerns the multiplayer experience, I'd say. And
I would agree with that. The big thing was, though, at the time, I felt like sure, it was okay to criticize it, but I didn't feel like Voobly was the future, or at least playing the old Age of Conquerors was the future. I felt like we should be supporting HD because this is a sign of, you know, the more we support this, the more we're going to get other stuff later. And, you know, I was definitely disappointed when stuff like African Kingdoms came out and it was like you couldn't even play a game. It was, you couldn't get a game started type thing. And there were definitely features, but I always felt like it was important to support that main thing. And, you know, we ultimately got Definitive Edition probably because HD was such a success, right? So
there's no doubt about that. And I think part of this was Will, you know, I had Will on my show and I know you watch it. And he was a big part of that, I assume. But yeah, seeing that there was such a big audience for campaigns, for DLCs, for tournaments as well, I'm sure it played a role. Yeah. So you've just talked about a little bit, and I want to talk about a little bit more. I believe there's always been wide consensus in the community, even in the Voobly community, about how good your videos are. They're funny, entertaining, well-researched, incredibly well-produced. But one critique that has cropped up every now and then, and you just mentioned it, and it's a critique that has been especially loud in the Voobly community, is that the result of your research in some of your videos can't really be applied to a dynamic, complex situation, such as a high-level Age of Empires 2 game. Well, what do you make of that critique?
I hate to be a little on the nose, but I think that kind of misses the point of the videos a little bit. Like, not always. I mean, sometimes, for sure. I think that's a valid criticism. But I don't know, I'm kind of reminded of... So, like, I played baseball in college and in high school. And mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, yeah, if you're going to somebody and they're going to say, all right, I'm going to teach you how to throw a pitch, and this is exactly how you throw a really good curveball. And if that's the promise up front, and then, you know, you leave and you're like, I didn't feel like I learned how to throw a really good curveball, then, you know, absolutely you can criticize that. But I feel like it's like going to an article that says, okay, so here's the physics of how a curveball curves. It all has to do with the seams and the pressure on one side of the ball, and it curves. And you're like, mm-hmm. well, okay, but that didn't teach me how to throw a great curveball. And you're like, what? I'm not sure that was the promise. The promise is, you know, here's the thing in isolation. Isn't this kind of interesting to look at? Isn't this interesting to analyze? And I mean, that might help explain why, you know, high spin rate leads to a better curveball or whatever, but it's not explicitly trying to be a tutorial to teach you how to play at the highest level. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So to me, it's, you can sort of analyze these things as an interesting, and you kind of take small pieces away from it. Because, you know, I think there are useful things in the videos for anybody. And I always try to have something useful for a low level player, a medium level player. And I try to touch on something that would be a useful tidbit of knowledge for somebody high level. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, they're not explicitly tutorials. They are looking and breaking down things. And like you said, trying to be in an entertaining way and mm-hmm. to hopefully have some sort of takeaway from every video. That's really the goal.
So you're basically presenting information, and it's up to the people what they do with that information, right? You're not trying to tell them, this is what you should do, this is how it works
in the game. Well, this sort of goes back to how I've always been sort of against, you know, or at least traditionally I was against the idea of like, here's a build order, just do these steps and you'll always beat your friends type thing. And I kind of prefer, and like I have sort of done those, and I have so many different types of videos, it's really hard to sit down and nail down just one. We might even be picturing a different type of video here mm-hmm. during this conversation. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, I just like to do the things in isolation, and if you can kind of take away something from that that is useful, then that's great.
Concerning the build order specifically, has your opinion on them changed quite a bit? Because I believe that the I hear people talking about build orders if it was like the script that is going to tell you how to play from beginning to end. But for me, build orders were basically just watching recorded games and see what people do in Dark Age. That's it. You know, mm-hmm. when Dark Age is finished, you have to take it over yourself. You can't just let it all to the autopilot, so to speak. So has your opinion on them kind of changed a little bit over the years?
Well, just to start with, like, my initial pushback against them was that I thought it just raised the general skill level of the whole player base without really making it more fun for the people within the player base, and just made it more difficult for other people to come in who, you know, like to just sort of think and improvise their way through. And it basically made it so it was inaccessible for them. Like, they would come in and they'd be right at the bottom of the totem pole. Whereas one of the things that really caught me about HD is I came in, I hadn't played for, you know, whatever, 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I was not even that good 10 years ago. And I jumped in and I started, you know, winning right away because I was thinking about the game and I was, you know, rationing through decisions. And so it, you know, in a way, this is going to be taken out of context, but like, it kind of felt like cheating when somebody came in and they had a build order that told them how to get started in such a way they were in a position you could not catch up to them. And I felt like that would be a big turnoff once a community gets to that point. I think like StarCraft 2 is arguably, that's one of the reputations it has, right? Is everybody's figured everything out so much, it's really mm-hmm. hard to break in as a new player. So I felt it was one of those things that for the health of the game long-term, it would be better if the skill level didn't just rise to the point that somebody jumping in couldn't have some level of success, was I think my initial feeling at the time. Now, do I feel that now? I don't know. I think there's so many resources out there that really you could say anybody can find a build order now, right? Not to get hung up on build orders, but I feel like build orders are a stand-in for just all of the information out there mm-hmm. about the game.
Kind of a tutorial. And I kind of think, and that's obviously the big advantage of a matchmaking system, that the matchmaking mm-hmm. system takes care of that, right? I mean, if you're a new player, you're going to lose a ton, of course, but then you're going to find people on your level who might or might not know any of the build orders.
No, that's a good point, because back in the day, yeah, because, you know, back in the day with HD, you had to actually pick the lobby and you had to self-select. So that is a good point that now we have the matchmaking that does kind of take care of that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
Correct. Okay, so how much do you follow the competitive scene at all? Did you watch tournaments? Do you like watching tournaments?
I go through little phases of it, but I wouldn't say I follow it a lot. I don't really know. I mean, I know a few of the names and stuff, and I've seen some of them, but I don't really follow it all that much, to be honest. I mm-hmm. kind of prefer to play the game than to watch other people play the game.
Is that a general thing with computer games? You don't like watching esports in general, or is it just like with Age of Empires 2, you don't think it's a good spectator game?
I almost think with everything. I mean, like I said, I like baseball, but that doesn't mean I'm going to watch every game of the World Series, especially if it's not, you know, a team I'm cheering on. I don't just like, you know, love to watch it for the sake of watching it. And I think that's kind of the same. I've always been more of a doer than a watcher. I could rather, you know, create and do stuff myself. And I'm sure I would learn some stuff if I watched the tournaments and stuff. I'm sure it would be advantageous, but it's just a matter of, you know, where I want to put my time and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
But have you ever sat down and just watched, I don't know, one tournament game from beginning to finish?
Not sit down, just watch it, but like on the second monitor while I'm editing a video. I'm usually watching something or another, and if I happen to know there's a tournament on, sure, I'll watch in the second monitor.
So I'm sure you know this, but in October, end of October, we're going to have Red Bull Willow Legacy, and that's going to be the biggest tournament for the franchise that we've ever had. So it's $300,000 for Age of Empires 4 and $200,000 for Age of Empires 2. Are you going to watch that? Or at least the finals or something?
I didn't know the numbers were that big. Probably should. I'll tune in for a bit. I certainly won't watch the whole thing, but yeah, I might tune in for a bit.
Cool. It's going to be live. It's going to be out on land. It's going to be live from Heidelberg, which happens to be just around the corner. When you play,
from Portugal?
I'm from Portugal, but I live in Germany. So.
Okay. All right. So it's just around the corner from Portugal.
Well, you know, for Canadian standards, it could be kind of around the corner because you guys are so big countries over there. Do you prefer playing 1v1s or team games?
Oh, totally team games. Team games with people I know and that, you know, we have fun and different skill levels and stuff. I like messy games and always team games. Yeah, I'm not a big competitive 1v1 player. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done it before, certainly. And had my Road to 1800 series, but even that was,
I remember.
That was pretty short, but that was kind of following quite a few ranked games. And when I'd kind of gone through a phase of 1v1 ranked, but these days, definitely team games.
You said you like messy settings. So something like Forest Nothing, something like that.
I've never actually played Forest Nothing. No, I like the custom maps, like Metropolis, where you start with three town centers and
there's
a big lake in the middle. And so you just got to, you know, figure it out. There's no build order. You just got to improvise. You got to figure it out as you go. That, to me, that's when the game's the most fun.
Okay. So or what about something like Nomad?
Nomad's fine. That used to be one of my favorite map types for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's so interesting to me. To me, it's the exact opposite. I like stuff that I know what I have to do. people are different. That's just how it is. There are a few videos of you casting in your channel. Do you enjoy doing it? Is it something we can expect to see more often in the future?
I mean, maybe. I don't want to rule anything out. I would say that's not the best way I can contribute to the community, I guess, is how I would say it. I think my skill set is better used on the sorts of videos that I typically do. But mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't say no, never. I mean, I always get a couple out every year, same thing, especially if it's, you know, something like a scenario or something that's kind of, you know, again, not quite standard. That's kind of what appeals to me.
Mm-hmm. What about streaming? Would you ever consider doing it regularly?
The thing is, my content doesn't really lend itself to streaming unless we're just like hanging out chatting as I'm editing a video. I don't know. If I ever did like another Road to 1800 type series, I think streaming would be good because I kind of stopped that because there wasn't really a schedule for it. Mm-hmm. And so I think if I was ever going to do a gameplay like, you know, Let's Play Age of Empires, I think it would probably be streaming next time. But you know, I'm just kind of saying this off the top of my head. Like, I haven't really planned to do this.
You know, one of my viewers had an interesting question. We see some of the other big Age of Empires 2 personalities constantly collaborating with each other. You know, T90, Dave, Mem, Nilly, Viper. These guys are always showing up at each other's stream, be it to play games or cast together. Now, I do remember you participating in one of T90's 24-hour streams. That was a few years ago. I think you guys cast a couple of mini games together.
I think I was in two of T90s, and I think I was on with Hera twice as well. Yeah, so that's done a couple times, yeah. But the thing is, that works way better for streaming, I think, than for edited content, which is difficult to get schedules and like what's everybody's role going to be. And yeah, I think streaming, that kind of lends itself more to than collaboration. Like, I've tried to do collaborative videos before, but just, yeah, it's hard to find a way that it adds to the video and doesn't just create a bunch of extra work. And then plus there's like, well, whose channel are you going to upload it on and stuff like that. So I don't know. I did really enjoy the Hera and Tato interviews. I think that kind of thing would be good. But so many of the pros have their own channels now. They'd be like, well, why am I going to, you know, come on your channel and make content for you when I can just do it on my own channel type thing. So there's a little bit of that.
That's a good point. But I think a lot of people are starting to realize that was not the case before a couple of years ago, that it's actually better for everybody. That even if you both of you guys just upload the same thing, it's still better for the community because it's still more people that would probably not have seen it otherwise.
Yeah, no, I know some YouTube channels do that as well. Like, I've seen that sort of strategy, but it's not something I've really considered. I mean, I just enjoy the freedom of making the videos kind of how I want and when I want so much. Like, yeah, it's tough to, you know, I mean, it's just, it's different. And I like the idea of, I think if I were to ever make another YouTube channel, I would collaborate and like do it as part of a team. I'm not sure I would do it like a lone wolf in the future, but I think that's kind of how the Spirit of the Law channel has turned out.
So we're open to the idea. That's awesome. So I have absolutely no clue how much revenue a channel of your size is able to generate. So forgive me if this is a dumb question, but is YouTube your full-time job?
Well, it kind of depends how you define full-time. Are we talking like 40 hours a week, 80 hours a week? I think different people have different, it's the main thing I'm focusing on at the moment. But prior to that, basically from the start of the channel, I'd been a teacher, like a high school math teacher. And during periods like full-time, looking back on my channel, you can probably figure out when it was because I was putting out one video a month. And those are probably when I was teaching full-time. But yeah, no longer teaching at the moment. I just moved recently and haven't started teaching here at the new place I moved to.
You intend on doing that though, to start teaching again?
I'm not sure. I'm kind of happy right now. I'm not really sure what I don't think about. I mean, it's so hard to predict the future, right? Like 1 year ago, if you'd asked me where would I be in the future, I would not have said, you know, in a completely different province doing YouTube as my main focus. And that was even a year ago, I would not have said that. So yeah, I don't know. It's hard to make predictions and to say what the future brings.
Okay, so I wonder, when did you actually stop teaching full-time? And how was the transition from being a teacher and doing YouTube on the side? How did the whole thing look like?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because both started at the same time, right? And you're sort of raised to want to do the adult job and that YouTube is, you know, not a real job or whatever. It's just a side side thing, which is always how I viewed it. And it kind of early on, like I wasn't making any money off the channel, period, for probably the first 2 years or so, I would say.
2 years, okay.
Yeah, and then around that time, I eventually monetized. And then I kind of had a little system with myself that I knew how much I made as a sub per day. And it was like, if the channel makes that much, then I'll take one day off. And that'll be sort of my reward to, you know, make videos. So I was still making it in the evening and weekends, but then it's kind of gradually turned into.
We're talking 2016 probably here, right? Or 2015, something around those lines?
2016 sounds about right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple of years into teaching. And yeah, so then I was just kind of taking the odd day off and working on a video. And the videos were much faster to make back then, for sure. And
because it didn't have to research as much, or what made them easier to produce?
I had a much simpler video editing program and would just, it's just, I didn't put the time and attention into it that I do now. I mean, you know, the amount of time, it probably used to be, I mean, I remember hammering out like the Paladin video in a morning, like 2 hours type thing. Whereas now, oh boy, 2 hours, like I barely have the scenario set up and running the first test now. Like now it takes me 2 or 3 hours to make like 1 minute of video. And back then it was, you know, whatever, 6 minute video in 2 hours. So it's just very different in that way. And then yeah, I started to get some full-time contracts and stuff and, you know, my productivity kind of dipped down there for a while. And then Definitive Edition came out and that was right around when I moved and was just starting in a new place. And basically then I transitioned and then COVID happened. And so everybody got laid off from teaching. It was all teach from home and stuff. So it's more of a gradual transition. And then suddenly with COVID that I started teaching less and YouTube more.
So when did you fully stop teaching? Was it just before you moved to where you're
now? That was when I moved. Yeah, I still try to do at least one day a week just to keep my foot in the door type thing. You know, stay young, still, you know, keep up with the memes and the kid culture. And yeah, so, but after moving, it sort of, that all stopped. And then now I got no new memes because I'm not hanging out with teenagers every day. Totally disconnected.
You need a TikTok account, my friend. That's what you need. what grades do you teach, or did you teach?
I taught grade 10, 11, 12 math.
Oh, wow. Primarily. Okay.
And a little bit of grade 10 science and stuff, but it was mostly math. That's what's in demand.
So you're basically almost as young as they were. I mean, you look like a fairly young guy, so I'm pretty sure the kids loved you. Pretty sure.
Really? I'm 42, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are. I'm pretty sure you were the kid's favorite teacher. You have the vibe of the favorite teacher somehow.
The kids that figured out I was a YouTuber, I never told a kid. Some kid apparently recognized me from my voice. I also had a couple of videos where I had my face up, so I wasn't sure. But yeah, I always try to keep my identity a little bit secret because it just felt a little bit unprofessional. I don't know, like you're in a very professional sort of job, and it was definitely a distraction. But I don't know, it's kind of fun too. Like when kids come up, they bring their Age of Kings CD and they want you to sign it and stuff. Like that's pretty funny, but.
That's amazing to say that someone recognized you from your voice. That's absolutely amazing. And that someone was someone who played the game.
Yeah, no, actually a lot of the teenagers seem to know at least of the game and have an opinion of it. So that was actually surprising to me. I thought it had its moment back in the day, but no, it's still in the public consciousness.
Even if they're, because we're talking about what, 16, 17, 18 year olds here?
Yeah, 15 to 17, yeah.
And there are still people in that age range that still play the game?
Yeah, not too many. And obviously once they hear, the teacher, my math teacher has a YouTube channel and everybody wants to check it out and stuff. And then they learn more about the game, obviously. But yeah, now some of them already know what it is.
That's amazing, man. That's got to be so amazing because, I mean, kids know all about YouTube these days. And so they know what it means to have a 350,000 subscriber channel, right? So I'm pretty sure.
Well, it wasn't that at the time, but yeah.
But pretty close, surely, right?
I remember when I hit 100,000 and I remember that I was teaching two different classrooms across the school. And I remember crossing the school and I had like six kids go, "Spirit of the law." You know?
Amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, so I remember that day. So yeah, I was definitely teaching before I had 100,000.
So when did that happen? I'm kind of curious now, the 100,000 thing. Because you get like a whole YouTube button or something, right? Sent to you.
Yeah, you get a little, yeah. And I got one of the last ones of the particular type. I had one of the older models. The new ones are like all silver, and it was sort of a cost-cutting thing that YouTube did. And I got one of the last ones just before that. So I'm glad I didn't take a couple more months to get there. But
So when was that? Is it right around COVID? Because you said that's when you started teaching.
I think that was your friend. I'm imagining 2018 kind of sounds right to me about that time period, but I could be off by a year.
2018. So that was before DE came out, because DE came out in 2019.
Yes, that was before Definitive Edition. I think that was when Zero Empires was still around as well, because I remember we were sort of racing to see who would get there first. Not like officially, like we weren't talking about it, but I think we both knew we were coming up at roughly the same time.
You have degrees in psychology, English, education, and I believe you're currently pursuing a master's in mathematics. Now, you're quite obviously a very bright individual, but how does one go about completing so many degrees? Do you have like photographic memory or something?
No. I don't know. You just take summer classes, and it helped that my mom taught part-time at the university, and so I had free tuition. So I could basically rack up, because I did two degrees. I did the so majors in English, psychology, and biology. And I did a minor in math.
Biology as well. Okay.
Yeah. And then went on to do the teaching program. And then later, I'm just doing online courses to do the master's in math right now, which should wrap up next year. And even though if I'm not teaching high school math anymore, I'm not sure it's going to be too useful. But I don't know, I enjoy it. It's fun. And it's a nice thing to just have completed.
Okay, so I'd also like to talk to you about the current state of the franchise, you know, particularly Age of Empires 2 and 4. Let's
talk. Good time to talk about that.
Right? Yeah. So let's start with 2 first, though. Is Age of Empires 2 DE the best version of the game we ever had?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Yeah, no, absolutely. Just even the quality of life features and everything. Like, I'm so glad that Definitive Edition came out and was just so obviously better than HD that everybody moved over. Like, no matter where you were, you moved over to it. I think that's exactly what the game needed. And yeah, it's just, it's the best. Maybe not the scenario editor. Everything outside of the scenario editor. The DE scenario editor is pretty buggy. And yeah, that part's not that great, which, you know, isn't ideal for me, spending so much time in the scenario editor.
Doing your testing.
It's very buggy. Like, you'll click on a unit and you'll switch civs and it doesn't give you the right unit and stuff. But other than that, it's I think Definitive Edition is the best the game's ever been, for sure.
What does it do well and what does it do not well or not as well, apart from the scenario editor?
I can't think of anything that it's worse than previous versions. I just think the quality of life features, it's so much less tedious, repetitive stuff. And it's just more attention freed up on making interesting decisions and the kind of stuff that makes the game fun.
What would be your top one priority for improvement in the game right now?
Scenario editor.
You're right. Okay, yeah. Dumb question, actually.
Boy, that's a tricky one. I don't know. It's in such a good state. But I think I probably would have said that at previous times, too. And then they'd come out with some new feature that I'm like, okay, this is actually really good. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I really like the state and I really like the direction it's in. I mean, you know, people say stuff like pathing, but I think if pathing was an easy problem to fix, I think it would have been fixed 10 years ago. I'm sure that's a very, very difficult problem to work on. And I think they're tinkering away at the right things and, you know, the right changes are coming out.
Yeah, a lot of people have been complaining, particularly about melee pathing, right? So would you agree this is a big problem or is it being blown out of proportion?
I think if you think it's a big problem, go back and play HD or something, and or just go back and look at videos when DE first came out, and it's so much better than it was. So, you know, is it a problem or could it be better? Sure. But I definitely think they're working on it and it's making, it's hard to tell, like, you know, patch to patch, it's getting better, but go back and check something from a while back and they're definitely making progress with it. And the game just feels better in every way.
What do you make of the new DLCs that have been released in the last couple of years? Do you like that they're still releasing new civilizations, or would you rather have them release just only new campaigns and no civs?
Well, obviously, it's very much to my advantage when they release new civilizations and mechanics, and that's sort of what I'm known for playing around with. But even outside of that, just as a player, I think it's really good for the game, and it keeps the updates coming, and you know they have to justify the business model with new content, and I totally get that. So yeah, I think they've been really good. I think they've gotten much better at balance as well. It kind of feels like every new one, they have to tweak a lot less with, you know, subsequent patches and stuff. So I definitely in favor of the new DLCs. Hope they come out with one next year.
What
I'm surprised, the last one was so big. It had three new civs. That surprised me. I think they should go back to two. It's a lot to take in all at once. But this is my opinion.
Well, what do you make of the balance of the new civs as well? You know, Gurjaras have been perceived as a very strong civilization, Dravidians less so.
Because we know about the upcoming changes, right, that are probably happening in a couple of days, or I guess by the time this is out, they probably already did happen. I think they could probably do more. I'm not sure they're really going to, I think we'll still have two very, very high and two very, very low civs, but I like that they're doing sort of incremental changes, and they're not going quite as extreme as they did in some of the earlier patches. But part of that is they've got the balance basically right. I know that, you know, Gurjaras, some people are going to say they're way too strong. But if you look at the actual win percentages, historically, we've had much, much stronger outliers and stuff like that. So I don't feel too bad about it. I think they are aware that the civs aren't quite where they want them. And I think they're tinkering in the right way, in kind of incremental ways.
Awesome. You know, you said you play mostly team games, and you know, there's been a lot of complaints, at least from the part of the community that I come from, about the team game matchmaking. I think the 1v1 matchmaking has been considered largely a huge success, actually. I mean, I myself only play 1v1s. I had never had any issue. I find games in 2 minutes or something, and I'm 1600 or 1700. But I never played a team game in DE, to be fair. So what do you make of the...
Never?
Yeah, I've never played. Well, maybe once or twice, and it was unrated because it was with friends. So yeah, what's your opinion on the matchmaking for team games specifically?
It's inherently much more difficult, right? Because you've got, especially with different
people,
skill levels. Yeah, usually I play with kind of two people I play with the most. One's quite a bit stronger than me, and one I'd say is a little weaker. So it's hard for me to say, because as you'll notice, it's reactive to who I'm playing with. So if I'm playing a 2v2 versus one or the other, it definitely gives me a very differently skilled opponent. So I think it's doing a good job finding, it doesn't always, but like it doesn't always find a perfectly balanced match, but I think it's a lot better than the self-selection of, I'm not sure what did it, how did it work on Vubly? Did you have to pick your own lobby? I think you did, right?
Yeah, it was just lobby, just like HD. It was the exact same thing as HD. Yeah.
I think the team ranking isn't too bad. And I think it's definitely better than self-selecting lobbies for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What would you make of the argument that a lot of people would like to play the maps that they like, and they would like to have the freedom of picking just one map and not being forced to play maps that they don't like, which is a lot more prevalent in team games?
I am very receptive to that. I think part of that, though, I think that's kind of a technical issue behind the scenes of how the matchmaking works. So there's only so many bans they can do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely agree. It's tough when you're forcing people to play maps they don't want to play. And it leads to people dropping and all that stuff. I think that is something they're aware of. And I don't really know what the solution is to that based on sort of the system they've already implemented. But I would agree. I'm receptive to that, you know, sometimes you're going to have maps that you don't like. And I know for some people, it's their one game they're going to play the week.
Right.
And it doesn't feel ideal to force them to play a map they don't want to play. So yeah, that's one of the issues going on in the game right now, I would say.
One of the proposed solutions, as far as I'm concerned, is just give ranked lobbies to people so that they can grind and, you know, play ranked as much as they want. What would you make of that? It's something that's already available for a deathmatch.
So how are you saying that would address the map issue? Like, are you saying...
Because if you're playing a ranked lobby, you can just pick the map that you want to play and that's it.
Well, it would just be a matter of figuring out how the matchmaking system would line up people that want to play the same map. But yeah, no, if you can... I'm not sure I understand the question, to be fair, but...
Yeah, what I meant was having something completely separate from the matchmaking system, so you can just open up lobbies and you pick your map, but it's still rated. Because right now it's unrated if you just open up a lobby, right?
The reason I think they probably aren't doing that is the amount of people that would abuse that to get certain... Like, to get ratings that they want. And you know, part of the matchmaking is ideally trying to correct for that. But I don't know, I wouldn't have a strong opinion of that. Either way, if they implemented that, I'd say great. If they don't, I can kind of see reasons why they wouldn't.
Something that I was surprised to see, or at least that was how I interpreted it. When I had Will here, I asked him, would he be interested in introducing skins, be it for buildings or for units or for whatever? I was surprised that he didn't reject it right away. He didn't say he's going to do it, but he was like, well, you know, got to see. So he didn't completely reject it from the get-go. What would you make of something like that as, you know, as an extra method of monetizing?
I think that would be a tough way for them to monetize the game because I don't think a lot of people are doing that already. And, you know, people could make their own skins and stuff. And I know there are mods out there, but they're not super popular. They're doing that, I think it can also make the game, like the readability of the game, more difficult. So you'd have to really do it the right way. I also think it's different. You mentioned Tomb Raider. I really think something like a first person where you have like different clothing for your character or whatever to just kind of freshen up and like, this looks really cool. I don't know if people are looking for that in a real-time strategy game. So I'm not sure that would be super popular. Mm-hmm. Hard to say. Depends on the quality of how they do it. I mean, certainly stuff like the Indian reskin. I could have been wrong, like on the buildings. I think that Indian reskin, wasn't that a community project that somebody did that and they adopted that? Or maybe I'm totally off on that. Indians have unique architecture. I thought that was a community thing and then but maybe I'm wrong. But that kind of thing, I think like that if it's done really well, I think maybe some people would buy that. But I think DLCs would be much more popular than skins personally.
Would you understand people that would prefer to just have new DLCs with new campaigns and not necessarily with new civilizations? Because, you know, the critique here is that more civilizations means, a harder barrier of entry for new players because there are more stuff to learn. Sure. And so they should concentrate. And we have 42 civilizations right now. And so we should concentrate on new campaigns, or at least for the time being. Would you agree with something like that?
That's a tough sell for me, but maybe that's just because I see so many of the, YouTubers and streamers, they don't really play the campaigns all that often. And even when they do, they're not super popular to watch. So from my perspective, that doesn't really seem like what people are demanding. But then again, we talked about all those people who are not represented there that probably would like that. I think definitely, selling standalone campaigns. I could see that. that seems like a very Total War business model. Mm-hmm. We're circling on kind of these extra, you know, small things, and people pay $7 for them, and you kind of rack it up with these like very, very small items. So I'm surprised they don't try to find ways to monetize the game
more,
you know, similar to that. Yeah, because you look at, I mean, just to bring up Total War franchise again, I mean, they have a new game every 6 months, it seems, and all of them have tons of reskin and, you know, different campaigns and stuff. I mean, they have found a way to really monetize that, that it seems Age of Empires hasn't quite, that maybe just doesn't lend itself to that kind of thing as much. Right, but definitely, yeah, campaign packs, I totally, future DLC that's only campaign, but I'm sure people would love that.
Do you enjoy playing campaigns?
Not so much. Back when I first got the game, I played that quite a bit, but no, not as much, to be honest. I know there's really, really, really good ones though. And whenever I play them, they're always very high quality.
Right. So let's go to Age of Empires 4. So you did cover it quite a bit when it was first released, and you said yourself the game has helped your channel grow quite a bit as well. But now we've mostly stopped covering it. So I guess the first question would be, why did you stop covering it?
That is really a YouTube thing. So I don't know how interested people are in sort of how YouTube works. But basically, when you put out a video, like just getting the mechanics of it, the short answer is YouTube punishes you for having two completely different audiences. So basically, you put out a video, it shows it to your subscribers, and there's a bunch of unofficial subscribers you have that watch your videos and it recommends your videos to, but they haven't actually subscribed. But as far as YouTube is concerned, they are subscribed. And so it shows your video to all the people that are really interested, and it says how much do they click on it, how much do they watch, how much do they engage with it. And if you have a split audience where 3/4 of them only watch your AoE2 stuff, 1/4 only watches your AoE4 stuff, no matter what type of video it is, it's convinced that a big portion of your audience doesn't care about it. So even if 1/4 of your audience is AoE4, you put out AoE2, it's still showing it to your AoE2 viewer or AoE4 viewers, and they're not clicking on it, they're not watching it very long. So as far as YouTube is concerned, that's a bad video. And so it doesn't start showing it to other people. So you really hamper your channel by having distinct fan bases. And so early on when AoE4 was on the way and everybody was really excited, AoE2 people were watching those videos.
Right.
And then very quickly, there was a huge backlash from the AoE2 community against AoE4 right afterwards. And very quickly, I noticed the AoE4 videos were not doing particularly well. It wasn't even that fun to analyze, to be honest. It's certainly at the time, I think it's better now. But I'm used to in Age of Empires 2, the more you dig into a topic, the more interesting stuff comes up and keep going, oh, like, wow, I didn't even realize that. Like just last year, I was looking at how does a unit pick its next target? And I thought it would just be random. And I'm like, oh, wow, it's actually not random. It's
calculating
the shortest distance and which one to beat first. Yeah, and you're like, wow, there's an incredible amount of depth. And that happens over and over with AoE2. Mm-hmm. Whereas the AoE4 videos, like I think back to the farming video, and it's like the deeper you look, the more mistakes you find and the more, you know, where they hadn't quite, like you had the granary that the Chinese players would drop off the food, but they put the drop off point in the middle of the granary. So the granary, if anything, was barely better than a regular mill. And you're like, it's kind of hard to stay positive with that kind of thing when you're pointing out just an unpolished game. So it wasn't as fun. YouTube was sort of pushing back against, you know, making that content. So the decision was kind of obvious, and I wasn't playing it a lot for fun anyway after the first little bit, and it was kind of hard to get the regular friends I play with to play it as well. So I don't know, it's in a good state now though, everything I've seen. So I think it's making a comeback, especially this week with the as we're recording this.
You're right, we're going to talk about that in a minute, but you said you wouldn't have expected AoE4's numbers to fall well below Age of Empires 2 so fast, and I think that's true for a lot of us right now. As you just said, I know things have changed recently, but putting that aside for now, why do you think Age of Empires 4 was not able to retain a lot of the players that did try it initially?
The obvious answer is it was missing a lot of super basic RTS features. I can't believe they put out the game. Like even a month before, I was pretty confident, and I was even saying on my channel, maybe incorrectly, that I was pretty confident they were going to fix a lot of these things like hotkeys and stuff like that. It just felt like there were too many missing features to begin with. And, you know, this is people's free time and this is their money. And if they're not having fun with it, they just move on to something else. There's no shortage of games out there.
So just too many features missing.
I think so. Yeah, it's just the state. I am really curious what would have happened if they had waited till now to release it. If they just delayed it 1 year, they said, oh, COVID happened. You know, so there's just going to be delays. Sorry, guys, it's going to be out 1 year later.
Why didn't
they? I have to ask them. I have no idea. I think they really should have, because the game's in such a better state now. I think it, and there was so much hype when it came out. I think maybe they were trying to capitalize on that. But mm-hmm. I think that hype, I think they could have gotten it back in the years since, and especially if it had been in the state it is now. But, mm-hmm. you know, we saw it with like No Man's Sky. I don't know if you follow that game at all.
I remember. Shroud was streaming it all the time.
Yeah, and it was super hyped up. And, you know, people were saying they had a bunch of features they were promising. And then it came out and a bunch of them weren't there, and a huge backlash against it. And I hear the game actually got much better later on. But just that initial impression, is that kind of taught me you really got to nail it the first time when you mm-hmm. release, or you just get a bunch of bad reviews. And there's a bunch of people that check it out that are not going to come back. And I'm worried that's what happened with AoE4. Not that I'm super invested in AoE4's success, but I'd like to see it do well.
Oh, do I hear a little bit of skepticism there? You're not too invested in Age of Empires 4? Because you hear from a lot of people that the success of Age of Empires 4 is going to be good for Age of Empires 2. So you don't think that's necessarily true?
I think there's two, they're in the same franchise, but two very different games. I don't think the future of AoE2 really rests on the success of 4. To be honest, I just think, you know, it'd be good. I mean, they obviously put a lot of work into AoE4, and I hope it's successful. And, you know, I'd like to cover it now and then if I'm having fun with it. But I'd sort of compartmentalize that as something different than AoE2 personally.
Do you think that the success of Age of Empires 4, if it comes now, will it hamper the success of Age of Empires 2?
I see so little crossover. I've been amazed at how little crossover there is between the fan bases. Like, it genuinely amazes me how little there is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really think they have a lot to do with each other, to be totally honest. Unless AoE4 is able to start appealing more to AoE2 players. I don't really see a huge connection between them at this point.
You don't see that happening. Right. Yeah, right. So as you just said, a lot of good things have happened recently for the Age of Empires 4 community. The price of the game has been reduced by 50%. Two new civilizations have been announced. Most posts I read on Reddit claim the game's in a very good state right now, and it's really fun to play. And, you know, the community has reacted really well to this. Of course, the number of people playing the game has gone up recently. So, yeah, where do you see things going from here for Age of Empires 4? Is this the beginning of a new boom in popularity of Age of Empires 4? Or do you think things will go back to where they were just a couple of weeks ago?
It's impossible to say. I don't know.
Have you played
better? Better than it was before. Have it? Of course. I play it. I play the odd game every now and then. But it is mm-hmm. hard to get, mostly just against the AI and stuff.
Okay.
But it's so hard to say. I don't know. If they keep doing what they're doing and keep making it better, and their marketing has also gotten much better lately than it was before. So if they keep making good decisions, I think it can
what
happen.
Has changed? What has changed?
With the marketing, you mean?
The marketing thing, yeah. Yeah.
I feel like they're being much more transparent, and they're, I don't know, there's just fewer missteps. It's hard to say. They had a very almost bizarre marketing strategy leading up to the game, sort of what they were hyping, what they were keeping secret. And I feel like they're much better about being transparent now with it. So I don't know, it's just an overall vibe. I'm not sure I can point to like too many individual examples, but I just getting the vibe that they've learned a lot from sort of the earlier missteps, and they're doing a much better job now.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if it does get a boom in popularity with the new civs and, you know, the price reduction, do you think it has the potential to become the most popular game in the franchise, or is that ship sailed too long ago?
Sure. I don't see why not. So much of this is contingent as well on what happens with AoE2. And because AoE2 has had a lot of exciting things happen the last few years with Definitive Edition. And it's hard to say really the direction of AoE2 in the future, and if it's going to stay this popular, or if it's going to, you know, drop down. I mean, there's no reason it can't have half the player base. I mean, player base is double in half all the time, right? So I don't know. I don't think too much about how they compare, to be honest. You kind of got me unprepared here. I haven't really thought about it too much.
That's cool. Speaking of which, because you said you don't know if Age of Empires 2's popularity is going to stay this way, are you scared for the popularity of Age of Empires 2? Do you see it going down at some point?
I mean, as a YouTuber, I mean, I would like for it to, to at least stay it as it is right now. But I don't know. It's so hard to predict. I think probably if they stop releasing DLC, I would think there would be sort of a slow trickle of players away from it just over time. You're just not bringing in new players to replace people who, you know, have kids or get a busy life or whatever and move away from it. But I don't know, AoE2's got so much replayability. I'm not too worried about. I think there's always going to be a strong scene there. I think, you know, this idea that, you know, 70 and 80 year olds don't play video games. I think as our generation goes through, I think they will. I think there's going to be people still playing this game long into the future.
It has to, right? I totally remember when I was 15, 16, I was playing a lot of computer games. I remember thinking, yeah, well, when I have kids and I have a job, I'm surely going to stop playing video games. Now here I am. I'm 35. I still love playing video games. I don't have as much time. So it's not going to stop, right? People who are playing the game are probably going to keep playing it as long as it's popular,
yeah.
Right?
And it's just, it's in the culture now. Yeah. And it's just, yeah.
Right?
I think those
right?
people are going to stick around for sure.
What an amazing shift. Right. So, you know, personally, I haven't bought Age of Empires 4. I didn't try it.
Mostly
because I don't have the time to learn a whole new RTS. I've got two kids. And so learning the game was never really an option for me, but I definitely wanted to like it. I wanted to like watching it. You know, it's Age of Empires 4. I want the franchise, you know, to flourish. And I really gave it a fair try. But for whatever reason, which to this day, I'm still not sure what it is, I just don't like watching it. I don't know why. I'm wondering, what about you? Do you like watching it if you're just watching someone else playing the game? Now, I know you don't even like watching Age of Empires 2 all that much, but what about Age of Empires
2? Oh, come on. I don't know if that's fair. I don't do it that much. I'm not going to say I don't like it.
Okay. All right. You see where I'm trying to go here.
I see where you're going, yeah. No, I don't find it as... I would probably watch AoE2 over AoE4, but that might be because I understand more of what's going on and the nuance of what's going on. I think so many of these things, like watching anything, like the first time you watch hockey, you're like, this is really boring. But after you watch anything a bunch of times, you kind of start to learn what's going on and, you know, what players are thinking about, how they're reacting, the dynamics. I think anything gets more fun as you learn more about it and you watch it more. So I think if you gave it a lot of time and watched a lot of AoE4, I think you would like it more. I think that's just human nature.
What do you make of the graphics? It's one of the complaints that a lot of people in the Age of Empires 2 community have talked about.
I think it's so funny how much everybody, that's all anybody talked about. Maybe, and again, that was partly the marketing. That's all they really gave anybody to go on was just graphic shots. But it's funny, nobody talks about that anymore. Nobody really, I don't know, you just get used to it. And that's just what the game looks like. So I don't think graphics are super important for any game. I mean, just look at Civilization VI that came out looking very cartoony compared to Civilization 5 and the huge backlash. And then just many people play 6 as 5 now. So I think graphics are something you get used to very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you don't mind that as much. Okay. Okay. So Spirit, I'm about to let you go, but you know, my last two videos on the channel have been a quiz show between popular personalities in the community. And for my tiny channel standards, they have been both a huge success. Now, this might come as a shock to you, but the one participant people have been asking for the most is you.
Oh,
so what do you say, my friend? Would you be willing to participate?
Yeah, I haven't watched the whole thing, but I jumped through it. And boy, you asked me tournament questions. I would know none of those, to be honest. So.
Okay, listen, I'm willing to tweak the questions to fit both my both participants.
I knew you'd say that. Don't push it, man. You already got me on camera for the first time
ever.
That's cool.
We'll talk about it sometime later. Spirit, man, I'm so thankful for this, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. This was amazing. It was really nice to know more about you. And yeah, I hope to see you, you know, collaborating a little bit more with the bigger names. I'm sure they'd be delighted to have you as well on their stream.
Well, there you go. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the very well-researched questions and great atmosphere that you always create. Love your videos, man. It's great.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you so much.